You've entered Book Storm with Kristen Civiletto and me, Chris Storm. This is a podcast devoted to best-selling books that matter, books that make a difference. We're diving down deep with beloved authors about their stories. We're exposing hot-button topics and heartfelt themes, the issues that affect each of us in our own lives, as siblings, parents, partners, friends, as human beings. We're braving new ideas, fresh thoughts, hard lessons, and important truths. Those kinds of things that stay with us long after we turn the last page and close the book. Welcome back to Bookstorm Podcast, book lovers. And guess what? We have a very special episode today. It is the 100th interview for Bookstorm Podcast. We planned this ahead strategically because you love great fiction. So do we. And we brought you a very special author for our 100th anniversary. We have Patricia Cornwell with us today. Thanks so much for joining us, Patricia.
Well, thank you and happy anniversary.
Thank you. We're here to talk about her new book, Unnatural Death, that Kristen and I loved. But before we do, Patricia has so many followers all over the world, but maybe there's a few things you don't know about her. Do you know that she has sold over 100 million books? She has 29 books on the New York Times bestseller list. Wow. What an achievement. Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
I love this story about your first novel, and I have to share it with our listeners. It was called Postmortem. While working as a computer analyst at the office of the chief medical examiner in Richmond, Postmortem was the first bona fide forensic thriller. The transition to literary superstar wasn't easy for Patricia. At her first book signing, held during a lunch break from the morgue, by the way, Patricia sold no copies of Postmortem, and she fielded one question where an elderly woman asked her whether she could find the cookbooks. That quickly changed because Postmortem went on to be a huge success. It won the Edgar, the Creasy, the Anthony, the McCavity Awards, as well as the French Prix de Roman d'Adventure Prize. I am just astounded by everything that you have achieved in your writing career. It's obvious that this is a gift and a talent and that you are meant to be here. Now, we're here today to talk about Unnatural Death. And all of our listeners will know that this book, like many of Patricia's other novels, center around the medical examiner Kay Scarpetta, her tech-savvy niece Lucy, and the fellow investigator Pete Marino. Do you know that this series is celebrating 25 years, and these characters have grown into an international phenomenon? Because of these books, she has won the Sherlock Award for Best Detective created by an American author, the Gold Dagger Award, and RBA Thriller Award. Many congratulations. For you book lovers out there, she has written other things. She is a definitive account of the Jack Ripper identity that she's written about, two cookbooks, a children's book, the biography of Ruth Graham. She's also developed two other series based on Wynn Guarino, an upstart Boston detective, and Andy Brazil, an enterprising Charlotte reporter. And oh my goodness, you're an advocate, you're a founder, you're a funder. You're committed to funding scholarships and literary programs. And thank you for being such a success, but giving back. We have all benefited from your career. Thank you.
Well, gosh, it's my pleasure. I mean, I never asked for a career like this, and I never, ever imagined I would have anything like this. I never even thought I'd get published. You know, when you have four books rejected, I went to the morgue to do research. I never went there because I wanted to work there. In fact, when I was in college, there were several things I wouldn't do. I dropped computer science immediately. I was never going to deal with computers. And I wouldn't go to funerals. I wanted nothing to do with dead people, nothing. I was afraid to go to stuff like that. So the fact that I end up a computer programmer in a morgue is someone's idea of a joke. So never say never is the moral of that story. But I was very, I mean, honestly, the first, I'd been at the morgue 4 years. And when I finally wrote Postmortem, and I'd written three full length books where Scarpetta was a lesser character. And you know, after year four, I thought, I'm just, you know what, I'm going to have to go back and try to get back into journalism. So I wrote Postmortem first. It started making the rounds in 1988 when I'd finished it. After it'd been rejected by about seven publishing houses, I started taking Amtrak and going to newspapers to see if anybody would hire me. And that was dismal. I never forget the Washington Post said to me, "We don't have a morgue beat." And he said, "You've been at the morgue longer than you were a police reporter. No, thank you." And the Wall Street Journal wouldn't even hire me as a clerk. I would have done it. I thought, you know what? You've really ruined your life, you know? And so I came home on the train. This was in January, 1989. And back in the days of answering machines with little lights, you know, flashing, I kind of missed that, actually. It would make me happy when I'd walk in the door and I thought, somebody still knows I'm alive. Look, I have a light flashing on my little answering machine. And it was from my agent. And he said, Scribner's might take your book, might. They had to deliberate a little longer because they'd never seen anything quite like this before. And then they took it on for the whopping sum of $6,000. And then it went on to win more awards for a first novel like that than ever has happened even since. And that was made a huge difference. But again, I say with well-deserved humility, how the heck that happened to me, I don't know, because I was pretty sure that I wasn't going to amount to much in life.
Well, thank you for sharing that, because you're an inspiration to anyone who's listening. You know, whatever your field is, or you think that your talent or your gift or your calling or something you're good at, here's a lesson, and don't give up too easy. Keep at it, because you stuck with it for a good long time, Patricia, and we thank you for that.
Thanks.
Yes, it's so inspiring to hear. There's so much wisdom coming out here. I appreciate all of that. Well, we're here, of course, to talk about the newest installment of your series. And I love this book, Unnatural Death, for so many reasons, most of which we can't even talk about because we might give away some spoilers. But Patricia, if you don't mind, I'm just going to give a little bit of the storyline. And if you want to add anything, of course, we would love to hear from you. But I will not give away any spoilers, which is
hard. The one thing I will say up front that you have to start with is just the very basic question. What would Scarpetta do if she met Bigfoot?
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. And honestly, that's a question that as I was reading the story, and I think Chris did too, we both asked ourselves that question. And it was very timely because at the time we were reading it, stories were coming out in the news about a sighting of Bigfoot and a video that was supposedly captured. So I just loved the excitement that was being generated just by that video and reading at the same time.
Oh, it's so much fun. I mean, you know, I have to say this book, and I'm not just saying that because it's the new one out, but it might be my favorite one I've ever written. And I think part of it is because I just said, you know what, let's just go somewhere that you're a little afraid to go. And I've always been afraid of talking about things you can't prove because, you know, my stuff has been so research driven, so factual, and you can't prove Bigfoot. But I was very curious about it. And the more I started reading about it and looking into it and talking to people, I saw the science in it and why I think it to begin with, because it did exist once. It started, you know, in China hundreds of thousands of years ago. And so I started looking into it and I thought, well, let's just go to town with this. Let's just see what happens. But I know he didn't do it because it's humans who are nasty, not Bigfoot. And Scarpetta figured that out pretty quickly, that she was more worried about, you know, the humans running around. So, but it was very a rich experience for me to get to explore something that was spooky and to go, are you really going to have them here wood knocking? I mean, are you going to have that for sure? Because I said, yeah, they got to hear it. And by the way, there are other ways scientifically you could hear something like that, even if there's nothing there. So that's up to people whether they believe it or not. There's technology now where you can turn the sky above you into a speaker and you'll hear sounds coming from heaven, so to speak, that you think are real, but they're not.
Wow.
an air raid going on, or it could be a rocket going overhead, and none of it, it's all being, it's not real. Wow. It makes you wonder after a while if we're going to be able to tell what's real or not after, you know,
too much time passes. Well, that makes a lot of sense, because your book started out with Dr. Kate Scarpetta, where she's comfortable. And that is, you know, trying to figure out a cause of death. In her laboratory, she's, you know, summoned to a scene. That's normal for her. She's comfortable in that atmosphere. But things really did rapidly change. And I love in the story how you put her and the reader outside of their comfort zone. In your story, we had two campers, and they were found in the Northern Virginia wilderness. And these campers were wanted by law enforcement. Again, comfortable, everybody's good there. But the problem is, we have mutilation, we have things that happened at the scene that were bizarre. They made no sense scientifically. And so that's where, of course, a lot of what you were just alluding to comes into the story, which was absolutely awesome. Now, there was a larger than normal footprint that was also found at the scene, in addition to the knocking you reference and a few other larger than life animals, for example. And in your story, Dr. Scarpetta needs to determine how they died, but more importantly, it's who that was keeping her up at night. So we're thrilled. We were excited. We couldn't turn the pages fast enough. And if you want to add anything, that's probably about all we can give away without a spoiler.
Well, the only thing I'll say is that I especially had a good time with the body recoveries, because they were God awful, awful. I mean, you have one, I mean, I can say this much, it won't spoil anything. You have one body that's about 20 feet down in a mine shaft, and then you have another one floating in the lake. And the bodies are unclothed, and they've been stabbed with their very own hiking poles. And is that gruesome? Yes, but why is that important? Well, first of all, it's gratuitous. It was after the fact. And Scarpetta knows that right away. But what's important about it is, if you are attacked with a weapon that someone didn't bring to the scene, that is a different story than someone that shows up with something. And this, whatever did this, used things that were available. There were, and other stuff, because we find other things. And it becomes apparent pretty quickly that, you know, Bigfoot didn't do this, but here's the weird thing. There's surveillance cameras along a path that leads to this campsite, because these people are bad and they're committing crimes off the grid out in the middle of nowhere. When the camera, the motion sensors are activated when this thing is coming down the path, and you can hear it, these big footsteps coming down the path, and you can see the branches being moved out of the way and things being disturbed, but you can't see what it is. It's invisible on the cameras. And how is that possible? And so it almost seems like there's something paranormal going on here, but of course, all will be explained. But doesn't mean it's a pretty story.
This is a great teaser for all of our listeners and readers. I'll tell you what, I could not get over the crime scene. And I love Kay Scarpetta. She's smart, caring, intuitive. She doesn't cringe at a whole lot of blood. This scene just made the reader feel like they were actually there witnessing it. Tell us why, as the writer, especially in this particular story, that we needed to see and hear and feel this crime scene in every way. I don't think it's a spoiler to say we had two victims who were impaled by hiking poles. And we walked through this entire autopsy. It was vividly specific and intriguing. I know I looked at your history, and you had a mentor that was a medical examiner, Dr. Marcella Fierro. I believe she started you off, but now you are in tireless research of cutting-edge forensic technologies yourself. Can you give us a little glimpse of what you learned from Dr. Fierro and why your research is so important right now into these crime scenes?
Well, you know, Marcella is still around. She's in her 80s now. When I started out at the medical examiner's office in 1984, she was the first medical examiner I ever met. She was friends with somebody that my then husband and I knew, and they got me an interview with her. So I went down to the morgue. It was the spring of 1984. It was just not even a year since the Ruth book had come out, and I had decided I wanted to write books about crime, you know, mysteries, even though I'd never read them before, but I thought, I'm going to see what I can do with this. So I wanted to know what happened to the body, because I'd never seen that when I was a journalist. And so I went to the medical examiner's office and I met Marcella. There weren't many women doing this back then. And she was absolutely amazing. She gave me a tour of the morgue. It was all closed and cleaned up. But she told, I said, so what's next? What's going to be happening? And she says, well, there's two things coming down the pike. One is something called DNA. And the other is using lasers to find trace evidence and stuff on bodies. And I went, ooh, well, now you got me hooked. I said, when can I come back? And so I started coming back, and she would only let me come back about once a month. And I said, when are you gonna let me see an autopsy? And she said, it's not a spectator sport, quote unquote. And she said, you don't have any legitimacy for me to let you see an autopsy. And I said, well, what would it take for me to have legitimacy? She said, well, go become a volunteer police officer. I said, okay. So I came back a little bit later wearing a uniform. In fact, some of my stuff is right behind me. I don't know if you can see my police hat back there.
Yes.
And my shoes and things from back in the day when I was quite proud of myself in my little hotsy-totsy uniform. but she let me follow her around everywhere. I was in the morgue every morning. I'd stand by her while she did autopsies and I'd scribe for her. I went to court with her. And I spent 6 years doing that because it took me so long to get published. And even today, like when on this new book, about a year ago, when I was in the early stages of it, I called her. I said, let me give you a hypothetical. You got a really bad crime scene out in the middle of the woods. And there's a dirt, muddy area, and somebody finds this enormous footprint that looks like you know what. And she said, I said, what are you going to do? She said, well, first thing I will say is maybe someone's having fun with this, but I'm not sure. I said, but I'd treat it like any other evidence. You have to. And I said, and so, you know, we literally talked about that. And so she is still somebody that I talk to today, because no matter how much research I do, she's a real forensic pathologist, and I can't even imagine how many autopsies she's done. And I know the things that she's seen, and some of it's so bad that she doesn't even seem to remember them. I'll say, do you remember that case? No. Would you remember that? No. Well, she doesn't have to write books, so she might be best blocking out a lot of that stuff, right?
Thank you for sharing it all with the reader, because we're not exposed to this in our lives, but we were able to walk the crime scene. We went in that autopsy exam room with you. And I was telling Kristen before we got started, I never realized all the clues that are left behind till you walk beside an examiner. And it made this story really fascinating, really.
Well, you know, you find out things in it. So I still remember real cases, you know, where you find out what really happened and it's not at all what you thought when that body first gets wheeled into the morgue. And then they do an autopsy and something like the stomach contents, for example, might tell you a totally different story than what you think. And all of that matters. And then you have to know what things can happen, because sometimes digestion can stop and it looks like somebody ate dinner right before they died. And in fact, they ate it 8 hours earlier because they were in a terrible, stressful situation, like panicked, like when someone's being held hostage all night, their digestion shuts down, or it can. And I've seen stuff like that. And I was very lucky to have Marcella teach me. And I'm very thrilled that we're still friends today. And I tell her, I said, you will go down in history as being to blame for Dr. Scarpetta. Oh, but real quick, when you were talking about the vividness of the scenes, my philosophy about writing is your writing should be as a clear pane of glass. It should not call attention to itself. It's supposed to take people somewhere. And it doesn't mean that you don't write poetically, because if you write really well, the rhythm of the sentence is telling you something the same as the words. You know, it's all part of that experience. And my number one goal is to take people on a journey. That's why my little tagline for Unnatural Death is an adventure unlike any other. Because I'm going to take you on an adventure that's not going to be like anything else you're going to go on with anybody else ever again, unless it's Scarpetta. Because she's always going to take you into the darkest places, but you're holding her hand and it's okay because you'll be fine.
Yeah, you did it. You achieved it. And we were with her helping to solve that crime in our own minds. It was amazing.
Patricia, I want to ask you about an underlying theme in your story. You kind of were writing about the danger of people desperately wanting to believe that something is real. And in your story, two people lost someone, at least two people, and they clung to a representation of them or an avatar of them. In fact, mm-hmm. one of them also had a lifelong passion for tracking something mythical. And perhaps it clouded his judgment. I don't know. But this desire to want something to be true can be dangerous, right? In science and in relationships. Absolutely. And I wanted to ask you, are we more vulnerable when that underlying desire to believe something to be true is present?
Yes. Yes. We are, whether it's good or bad. It's whether you're watching the news and you just don't want to believe that there can be, you know, this war or that, or you don't want to believe that there's a problem because it's too uncomfortable. The fact of the matter is we really do need to look at things for what they are. It's hard because we don't wish for bad things and we wish for good things. And you might not get either. But part of life is adapting to what's before you. And if you don't see the truth, then you have no chance of doing anything about it. So it's a placebo. It's fake. It might make you feel better to think that something's real or something's not real, but you better look into it. And then, and actually, when you look into things, like when I started looking into Bigfoot, why do people believe in this? And is there any credibility to it? And I started reading all these things and I thought, well, I have a very different point of view now. I didn't know this, but I didn't want to believe in Bigfoot. I thought it sounded nonsense. I did not. And now I'm pretty much thinking it probably is true because I don't know why anybody would think that during the Ice Age, when you have early humans and other animals coming across land bridges between what was then what would be Siberia and Alaska, and it's not even 300 miles to walk, what makes you think that things like that didn't get here up there in the Pacific Northwest and then migrate to other heavily forested areas where there's food and water and shelter away from nasty people, right? But yes, I'm always exploring these things because Scarpetta is, like you would say in Italy, the mouth of truth. Whether you want to hear it or not, she's going to tell you what it is or what it's not. And she does not have any trouble with going, well, I'll be damned. You know, I don't know how that just happened. Like when they come back to the helicopter and it's clear something else was there first and left something for them. And it had to have hands to do it. What was that? And what is she going to say about that? She just says, let's just get the hell out of here.
Wise woman.
Yeah. Yeah. Bigfoot would be fine with her. He wouldn't mess with her. She's not going to hurt him.
Well, I love what you were talking about because our human tendency is to fill in the blanks sometimes. And maybe we do it consistent with our pre-existing beliefs or what we want to believe to be true. But you know, Dr. Scarpetta, she fights against that. That scientist in her is so well-grounded. And it's great because you always are measuring yourself up against her. How would I interpret that? And of course, she's so good at what she does.
Well, what, you know, it's fun that I'm so happy that I work with a character that I enjoy. I really enjoy Scarpetta. I've never gotten tired of her. I mean, when I quit the Scarpetta series back in 2016 and I was away from it for about 5 years, it wasn't because of her. It was just, I felt like I didn't have anything very original left to do. And so I thought I'll just do something else. So that's when I started researching space and did two space thrillers that nobody wanted. And, but it changed. It gave me this whole new wealth of material to start looking into new ways of telling stories with Scarpetta, you know. So I never would have thought I'd be writing about Bigfoot or having an autopsy in outer space like I did in the you know, autopsy a couple books ago, or the one I'm starting right now where I'm digging into all the stuff about UFOs because it's, you know, life beyond this planet. What does that mean? What's going on down here? And what does she have to say about that? We know what Marino will have to say about it. He's never met a ghost or a Bigfoot that he doesn't believe in.
I also, you had AI in this book, which is such a huge topic now too. Yeah, this is what we want to know about these things. We want to investigate things. And you're doing all the research and kind of laying it out for us. And it's a lot of fun.
I love AI. It's so interesting. I have a computer in the other room that's dedicated to doing nothing but talking to the chat, the GPT chatbot, the AI. I don't do it with my regular computer because AI, I know, duh, is smarter than me. And next thing you know, my book will be back the next day. And I went, who wrote on this? It's actually better. God, it's a lot better than I thought.
I got to ask you about this crime. I can't get over this crime scene. All right. I want to go back to that just for a minute for our listeners. Kay, Marino, and Lucy examined the crime scene and it showed, and I'm going to do a few quotes from the book. Gratuitously cruel murder. The final violent act was meant to horrify. It was the work of a sadist who wants to scare people into submission. Someone who gets off on it, even finds it amusing. Lucy summarizes with this definition of a psychopath. Some people seem to be born seeking revenge. They arrive on this planet ready to punish. And if you give them a reason, they'll never get past it. And then what happens? It's always your fault. I had to ask you about this psychopath personality in your research. How does a person become a psychopath? And it sounds a lot to me like this narcissistic personality disorder. What crosses over into psychopathic killer?
Well, you know, that's something that nobody really knows the precise answer to. I mean, we in nature or nurture, as they say. And I mean, that was one of the things I explored when I was, you know, with the Jack the Ripper, because no question that Walter Sickert, who I believe was Jack the Ripper, you're totally dealing with a sexually violent psychopath, you know. And we know what those characteristics are. First of all, whatever their reasons are, it has nothing to do with anything we understand. I once asked an FBI profiler, I said, when does one of these people put someone on the radar? He said it could be a woman who's paying for something at the cash register and her fingertips touched the guy's palm. And now, boom, and that's all it took. Because these people are not wired like we are. Walter Sickert, his father was a psychopath. He demonstrated antisocial behavior from the time he was a little boy, but he also had very savage surgeries from the time at age 3 in 1863. Imagine that. Wow. Probably no anesthesia on his, shall we just say, in his southern region, which would have been excruciating, and we don't know how disfiguring, and whether he was even functional, because he had 3 surgeries before they managed to correct something, but uh-huh. probably caused a lot of other trouble way back then. And all of this added to his fuel load, all of it. And so we don't know, but there's nothing more dangerous than somebody like this. You can't reason with them. And, you know, I remember a crime scene where a very horrible murder of a woman who came home and there was someone hiding inside her place and she didn't know it, of course, at first. And it was someone who had access to the apartment because he worked in the building, a maintenance person, so he was able to get in. Well, all I can tell you is the next morning she was still alive and the phone rang. It was her father supposed to pick her up and she acted really weird on the phone and he goes driving over to the house. Well, long story short, she was viciously murdered. And one of the peculiar things about it is that there were scrapbooks on the floor in the living room, her family scrapbooks, like she'd been going through them with somebody. So this made you think it's someone she knows. And plus it looked like she'd eaten dinner with that person. And you know, the door wasn't locked or anything when this person left. Well, long story, you know, to get to the punchline, it turned out it wasn't anybody she knew, except the maintenance person who had fixed her air conditioning a couple weeks earlier, and she'd been nice enough to give him a glass of iced tea. But what, you know, the scrapbooks probably were her attempt to humanize herself to him. Look, I'm a person. These are my parents. This is me when I'm 12. Humanize. Maybe you won't do this to me. Well, it didn't work. And usually it does not. People try to think they can reason with these people, but they have no empathy. They have nothing. They don't care. They're not moved by what you say. And so it's a very scary thing. And of course, that's the biggest enemy in Scarpetta and her cohorts, her crew's life. I won't go into detail, but they've had their monsters that sometimes come back. And they're people just like that.
It's fascinating because even in the real world, we come across people who are lacking empathy, who have narcissistic qualities. And so as I'm reading this book,
I see them on the news every night.
Right. We're trying to unravel this, and I'm suspecting everyone and anyone at one point in this story, and you're giving me little clues, and I'm doing my own investigation. And that's what's the most fun out of a book like this, that you allow the reader, we crawl into this book and we solve the mystery with Scarpetta. Thank you.
And it's right when you say we, because when, you know, I once had a reader tell me, well, they didn't tell me, it was in a little review thing that I happened to see, just a comment, and of this reader was talking about Scarpetta, you know, being told in the first person point of view, you know, I this and I that. And this person said, it makes me feel smart and I went, why am I so dumb that I didn't figure out that these people become Scarpetta? So you are solving the case. You are with her, and it's proactive that way. You're going to go on that journey. You're going out there to get that body. You're going down the mine shaft. You're up there in the helicopter with the body, you know, taking the bodies back to her office. Oh yeah. It's all on
absolutely.
You. It's a lot of fun too. Just to say for the record, it's a lot of fun. Thank you.
Yeah. There are thrills, but you also really touched on some very deep topics. And I wanted to ask you finally about one more of those. And that's something that we kind of see happening on a global level. There's some larger forces who want to destabilize society, and they tap into the discontent of others who may be vulnerable to achieve it. And I wanted to ask you about this because, you know, these pawns, I'll call them, may not realize that they're being manipulated along these lines. But really, it's for somebody else's very nefarious purpose or for distraction purposes. In today's world, with widespread disinformation, do you think this is something that we can even combat anymore?
Well, we're going to have to try to combat it, and it's going to have to be done on an individual basis where people themselves are going to have to be discerning. You can't expect that someone else is going to vet everything or censor things but, you know, I know myself, because I look at Twitter and stuff, you know, I look at news feeds just like everybody else. And I'm not sure if something's true. So I will look into it, because usually you can figure it out. I'll give you a good example. This was about a year ago. There was a news story that came out saying that Johnny Depp and the guy that plays Borat. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Sasha. I'm sorry.
Aaron Cohen.
Yes. That very funny guy. That those two were going, they were doing a movie based on my Jack the Ripper book. And I thought, well, I'd almost let this fake news just keep going because it's so good. And I'd be happy for them to do this. But I Googled it and there was nothing out there. And by the way, I thought maybe someone should have asked. So, of course, that was totally false. But what you do is you got to look into it. Don't just act on it. And honestly, you can find things out if you start digging and go to the more reliable news sources and go to more than one of them. Just don't make snap judgments. But it is dangerous. And what I find so frightening is what you're talking about is marginal people who then see something and then they act on it and it's all false. And the next thing you know, they're attacking a restaurant somewhere than this about something that didn't even happen. Yeah. Or they're going after somebody for something they didn't even do. So we have to be careful, but there's some genies you cannot put back in the bottle. You're not going to get rid of artificial intelligence. You're not going to get rid of fake news. But what Scarpetta would say is don't ever forget what autopsy means. Autopsia is it's the Greek word that means to see for yourself. That is what you're supposed to do. That's the whole point of an autopsy. You see it for yourself. You don't take anybody's word for it. Not even the way it looks on the surface. I'm going to go in, baby. I'm going to find out if you're telling me the truth about what happened to you. And so look at things for yourself. Go find out for yourself. Be sure of it. If you want to know if Bigfoot's true, go read about it. Yeah, go listen to the 911 calls like I did, because I'm telling you what, they will make your hair stand on end.
Yeah.
Whew, I'm not kidding. Those people, some of them, they believe what they're saying. I will tell you.
Absolutely. In fact, there are a couple scenes in your book that have just stayed with me. And one of them was one of your characters was believing what a bad Janet, we'll call her, was saying, and she wanted to believe it for, you know, different reasons, but she was very vulnerable to believing it, and it was true to her. And I couldn't get over this scene because I was awful. Thinking how much this is our future with AI.
Oh, it is. Oh, it's not just our future, my dear. It's here now.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people that are on the chatbot for AI all day long, and professionals are using it. Doctors are using it. Lawyers are using it. Everybody's using it. And so, and what you, and if you look, that if you go to the GPT-3, I think, version, and you look at one of the avatars that's been created, I swear, someone sent it to me, a NASA friend sent it to me, and I thought it was two humans pretending to be, I mean, I thought it was a joke. I didn't, when I found out it was actually an avatar I was looking at, I was stunned. Stunned. This thing had a sense of humor. It was joking with its maker. And now we're doing it, it's going to be robotics that are going to be this way. So it's astonishing what is going on, what seems like the speed of light. But if you have an avatar, what you can do is if you take a lot of video footage, and they're doing this already, because, you know, if you have people that have tons of video, like well-known people, they, it can be knitted together with AI, and you, same with their voice, and you can make an avatar that literally you could have somebody that you love that's died and have their avatar that you're talking to all the time. And here's the interesting thing about it. When you knit something together like that, when you make this avatar, it's based on another person. For a while, that avatar will be in character with that individual because of the parameters in the algorithm. But as the avatar continues to develop over time, it then begins more and more, becomes more and more like the person programming it. So the Janet avatar, and it's okay, because Janet avatar's been in, it was in my last two books too, that Lucy's dead partner, who's the avatar, Janet, that avatar over time will become less like Janet and more like Lucy, the more Lucy programs it. And isn't that like life when you think about it? It is. Be careful what you spend your time with, because you'll become more like it yourself, and it will become more like you.
So well true. Said. Well said.
There's a lot of wisdom in this book, I'm telling you, in so many different areas. Now, before we let you go, I have to ask you one more thing. So you took a break from Kay Scarpetta. Kay took a break. You came back a little different. Kay came back a little different. Do you see a lot of yourself in Kay Scarpetta?
You know, it's such an interesting question. Yes and no. The weird thing about Scarpetta, and I didn't know this when I started out, it's not just Scarpetta, it's any character that you create. When you create characters, they create you back. And as I created Scarpetta, I never realized that she was creating me. And she was. I had to learn what she knows. I had to learn to deal with dead people and do computer programming when I didn't want to. I had to learn to fly a helicopter and scuba dive and ride a motorcycle. And that may sound like fun, but it was scared the living hell out of me, all of it. And it was really hard, and it still is. And all of it, because I needed the characters to do these things. And then in turn, I'm doing them. Now, I'm not the same person. I am not the same person I was when I started all this. Back in the 1980s. And I can tell you honestly, I feel like my characters have made me better. They made me think more and made me look at myself in ways that I haven't before. And Scarpetta's a very good role model. I mean, I don't have a single bad thing to say about her. I mean, she could be a little more chatty sometimes, a little more friendly. She's not she's a little bit aloof, but she's a very deep person and a very caring person. But I hope people enjoy her, because if I've given them somebody that keeps them company the way she does me, then I've done a good thing.
She's an excellent role model for all of us. And that's why we love her, and a good friend.
Yeah.
We just love her. And can you tell us now, everyone's going to go out and buy this book. I just know it. And what, can you give us a clue what you might be working on next?
Well, yes. I do indeed. I am dealing with rather otherworldly things in this next book, in that there is going to be a death of somebody that Scarpetta has known for a very long time. Not anybody that you need to worry about. This is someone you've not met before. It's from someone that she had a romance with in her early days, who has something very bad happen that at a glance you might think he's been abducted by a UFO. and dropped out of one. And that's as much as I'm going to tell you, because she's going to have to figure out what on earth happened here. And there's very strange things that have been left. Like, it looks like he's got radiation burns. There's a crop circle where something was hovering that dropped the body out, and all sorts. And the fact that UAPs, as they're called these days, were picked up on radar in the very area around the time they think the body was left there. So she's got her hands full. I got to get back to it soon to see what happens.
I think that sounds wonderful. That's a hot topic today, too, that we're seeing a lot of and that we're intrigued by. And so, listeners, you're going to love this book, Unnatural Death. Connect with Patricia Cornwell. You can find her on her website, patriciacornwell.com. She's on X, Facebook, and YouTube. And you know what? This has been the perfect 100th episode for Bookstorm Podcast to have the amazingly gifted and talented Patricia Cornwell with us. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. And don't forget, we're going to have the Scarpetta TV show soon, too.
That's fantastic. We're very much looking forward to that. Huge. Hope to see you again.
Me too. Thank you.
Bye, Patricia.
Bye.
That's an unforgettable character and an unforgettable interview with the incredible Patricia Cornwell. Boy, I'm grateful to her because not only is there entertainment value to all that she does, but she really pushes readers to be thinking in these different directions. And I love it. I just love the mix of science and emotion and uncertainty that always plays out in her stories. There were a couple things that jumped out at me, of course, in this discussion. And I want to talk a little bit about this AI, because this was the book that I couldn't forget certain scenes. One of them involved AI, because it really did scare me. What are you reacting to?
I think I totally agree. You know, I like what she's doing with AI, with Bigfoot, with apparitions. At one time, I suspected. And now with her next story with UFOs, because these are all things that we suspect. We're unleery of, we're unsure of. Some exist, some might exist. And it's intriguing. But then she weaves in a lot of a research and investigation and truth into it. And it's just fascinating. Like, you put this book down, you feel like you've learned something.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I also really was struck by this idea of people who are vulnerable to being manipulated, to being pushed to do something that they might not otherwise do. Patricia referred to even people who are marginalized and they're taking steps that nobody in their right thinking would take those steps, but they're being pushed over that edge. That also concerned me greatly.
It does. It's you know what, and it follows in with that psychopathic narcissistic personality that we were discussing with her, that sort of senses who the weaker person is, or the person who is hurt, or the empath, the person who wants to make peace and knows who to take advantage of. And I find that intriguing. You know, there was one quote from Lucy in the book. She said, in this investigation of a murder, the temptation is to focus on certain details when it's the emotionality of the act that matters most. That's the true north. Kind of gets back to what you're saying. Like, who is the person behind this who has the need to overpower and mutilate? Who is the person that wants to intimidate and make a mockery, or goad and taunt or payback? It's fascinating. Personality types, fascinating.
Yeah, I agree, especially because the way that we look at crime now, we focus on the act and the intent, but we don't necessarily look at some of those bigger picture items, and that is extreme trauma in childhood. You know, how do we introduce something sooner into people's lives where we can get them off that potential track and onto another one? And I can't wait for us to learn more about the human brain and how, as you asked her, how these psychopathic personalities develop, because maybe we can intercede sooner and change the trajectory of someone's life.
Mm-hmm. She say nature versus nurture was huge, and we still don't have an answer to why some people behave the way they do. But readers, like, this is a mystery. You're going to crawl in this crime and you're going to help solve it, right, with Patricia Cornwell. I learned so much more about the crime scene and even the morgue and the autopsy. I just can't get over it. I loved it. Love the series. Have loved Kay Scarpetta for quite a while now. And It was a real pleasure. 100th birthday. I don't know. Do you call it our anniversary or our birthday? Or
let's
a little bit
both.
Of both.
Okay, and we're going to cheer it.
Cheers to 100 episodes. And it's thanks to all of you, listeners, book lovers, all of these amazing authors. Honestly, I got to thank all the publicists that we work with, all the literary agents we work with, all the amazing publishers we work with. We're all in this together, where we love good books. We love good fiction. We want to bring them to the world. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers to 100 more. And here's what we've got coming up. Okay, let's go on to 101, because here's what we've got coming. We have Lisa C. and Lady Tan's Circle of Women, Tess Gerritsen's Spy Coast, Jenny Colgan, Midnight at the Christmas Bookshop, Jacqueline Machard, A Very Inconvenient Scandal, Virginia Cantra, The Fairy Tale Life of Dorothy Gale, Kathleen Grissom, Crow Mary, Nick Petrie, The Price You Pay, and Nita Prose, The Mystery Guest.
I love it. And listeners, thank you so much for listening in, tuning in. We are so grateful to you, and we know that you love these fantastic authors. We have listeners now in almost 70 countries, all 50 states, and 1,500 plus cities. We are thankful for you. Keep on tuning in to us. You can find us at bookstormpodcast.com. You can find us on Instagram, on TikTok, on X. And if you want to go to YouTube, you can see all of our authors on the video. We have a whole bunch of them, 100. So we, of course, would love to see you and interact with you, and let us know who else you want to see on the show. Until next time, listeners, one of the best ways to brave the storm is to dive down deep into life-changing fiction.
Now, wait a minute before we go. Kristen, get your confetti. Kristen got a few bags of confetti. One burst open before the show started. Throw your confetti. I didn't want to have to clean it up. Yay! Okay, here's to the next 100. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Thank you.